Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Founders Club Radio.
Welcome to the Founders Club, where each week we talk to the founders and leaders of great private companies. I'm your host, John Coffin, and here with me in the studio this morning are two great entrepreneurs. Jackson Houck from Three is with us. He's the president and founder of Three. And Dudley King, who's a repeat entrepreneur and founder of FlightBridge and Palace Technology, is with us as well. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. We flipped a coin, and Jackson, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about Three and just the current scope of your business, if
sure,
you would.
Sure. We're a corporate communications firm. So our job is to help organizations define themselves with the folks that they feel like might influence their success. Our primary tools are advertising, public relations, direct response, social media, the things that people use to influence other people's opinions.
Now, you guys are coming up on your 14th, 15th
14.
Year? Okay. Nice round number.
Founded in 2000, shortly before 9/11, so it was a lot of fun to try and figure out how to build a business during that period of time.
Take us back to that point, Jackson, for you. What was the really the beginning point in your thoughts around Three?
Sure. I am not a serial entrepreneur. We've done this one time. So my background was corporate communications at sort of large organizations, 30,000-man groups like General Foods and Frito-Lay and Southern Company. And I was at Southern Company. We had an agency that went the wrong way. They had a large client leave and got upside down from a overhead standpoint. And we picked the pieces up as a small group and sort of courthouse steps moment and restarted the business and loved the people I was working with. They were actually my agency, so I was the client. I knew what kind of work they were capable of. And I felt like we could make something happen with that group of people.
So you started with that first primary client and then expanded it from there?
Yeah, one of the clients that had been at that agency decided that they'd give us a chance. And fortunately, we won a couple of pieces of business pretty early in that history. We brought a Southern Company's international business unit to market called Mirant, which was an Enron competitor that many people are familiar with. So Mirant was a big client for a small agency early on, and it allowed us to go chase a couple other legitimate pieces of business that are still clients today.
And are any of those people who started with you day one still with you?
They are. There were three of us. Actually, the story goes back a little bit farther. It was two guys that were creative guys and myself in an edit suite, not unlike this one, about 10 years before that. And we said, you know, we could probably work together if just given the opportunity. And the opportunity presented itself. So my two of the original founders of the agency are still the two guys that keep the business going.
Now, how'd you come up with Three instead of four or seven, are my favorite numbers?
Well, you know, if you're a lot of Asian cultures use three as a number that has some meaning, that has nothing to do with why we named the place Three. When you're a client, you sit in between a tension between your customer and your employee and your shareholder. And those three audiences want something out of you, and typically if you give it to one, you got to take it away from somebody else. So as a client, you sit in the middle of that that conflict, and you say, you know, how are we going to manage the expectations of those three audiences in a way that everybody understands what we're doing, that they're clear on why we're doing what we're doing, and there's some ability to believe what you're saying. And so our strategy has always been understand all the audiences that influence your success, whether it's financial, your own people who have to go out and carry your brand to the marketplace, or your customer, obviously, or their channel, and make sure that the conversation is consistent and believable between those three, so you've got some integrity going forward.
So that's a interesting concept, that confluence between those three. I think so many people, when they think of a advertising firm, they think of Mad Men and all that great stuff. But it's really your business has become a lot more complex over the last two decades, in that you now suddenly you not only have the advertising and marketing aspect of it, but also PR and social media and all that. Talk about how you're delving into that complexity these days.
Sure, we tend to break the business up between communications that you own, communications that you earn, and communications that you pay for. So you don't necessarily own the media, but you own the content. So paid media advertising, obviously. Owned would be something like your websites and the things that you really have complete control over, and earned is influencing somebody else to talk about you, whether that's a blogger or a traditional media relations exercise. And so understanding that our business has really moved from a monologue, you know, we'll tell you what to think about us, to a dialogue. You're going to define who we are based on your reviews, based on the social content, and understanding that the transparency that all the new technology has brought to business communications creates an environment where you better pay attention to what your customers are saying, and you may give them a voice in your environment, but whether you give them the voice or not, they're going to have one. So making sure that you listen.
So that's really only happened within the last 7 or 10 years that your consumer has a voice.
Absolutely. I mean, social media, the interactivity of the internet, the dialogue nature of brand communications is a very new thing for us. Mm-hmm. We've always had public relations is as old as hanging out a shingle in advertising, right? So the ability to influence somebody else's opinion is something that a good PR practitioner has always understood. But what's nice about the internet is that, you know, you can't get away with anything. And so you can for a little while, but people call you out. The good news there is the customer that's mad at you can't get away with it for very long either, because your customers that like you will come to your defense.
You love those customers that come to your defense, but yeah. How do you counsel people as they're going through those people who are giving them a hard time? Or, you know, it used to be that someone might have a big blow-up event, which creates a PR event or right. public relations right. issue, but now it can start with just one bad review.
Well, and, you know, integrity leads this conversation always, right? I mean, stay calm. You don't necessarily have to answer the minute that, you know, you don't have to pick the phone up, right? Take your time, get your thoughts together before you respond to the question. And you know, truthfully, we have a great public relations practice. That is not my background. We do a good bit of crisis communications. But what we typically always coach someone is that make sure that you know what your story is before you start to talk to people. And I think that the truth is out. The truth will be out over time. So you might as well claim the truth and own it, as opposed to trying to spin, because spin just doesn't last today. Lose more ground than you gain by trying to spin.
Great. For companies who are looking for a firm to help them with some of these issues, there are several great options, obviously, but what do you think are three's unique differentiators in the market as you compete against, I guess, much bigger firms, but also boutiques like yourself?
Yeah, sure. We are a boutique, and we claim the boutique campaign or the boutique banner, mm-hmm. and like it. We're about 40 people, as high water mark of about 45, backed up a little bit a few years ago when most folks in our business did. There's an intimacy to that size shop, but I don't, you know, we wouldn't sell on size. We sell on the fact that our adults are really adults. They've all come from major branded agencies all over the world, public relations, advertising. Most of them have had some client side experience. My client side experience and about half of my career has been managing agencies. So understanding what agencies do and how they do what they do and makes for a very empathetic agency as well. There are a lot of agencies where there's almost an animosity towards the client that lives just underneath the surface. And, you know, we all know who pays our rent. Right. And we built the brand around a lowercase T and 3 because we wanted to subordinate our egos.
Wow, that's really important. So putting the client first. Your client list is literally a who's who of companies. Georgia Power, Children's Healthcare, Simmons, Waffle House, one of my favorite places. Talk about a recent assignment or engagement that you had that you're particularly proud of.
Sure. Well, Georgia Power is probably the latest win for us. So we took Merit to market, and then they went away through a reorganization. And so we did not have a great utility client for a while. So I'm very proud of that win, and that's about a year and a half old now. I will caveat the Waffle House brand on our roster is Joe Rogers, who is the owner of the Waffle House family brand, says in his stump speech he doesn't spend any money on advertising. So he's my great white whale. We're going to get him to spend a real way someday. But we do project work for them. I love the work that we do for clients that are passionate about a purpose and not just about retailing a unit for a buck. So you can imagine Children's Healthcare. We've got a hospital in Jacksonville as well. that it's a children's hospital that allows us to come to work. And yeah, I've heard it put really well. You work 8 hours a day for a job and 10 for a good boss, but 24 for a cause. Mm-hmm. There's a causal nature to a lot of the things that we touch. And that allows our people to really want to be in and think in the shower. You know, we get a lot of our best work in the not 9 to 5 time. You can imagine it's a creative world. So, the good ideas don't necessarily happen when you're sitting at the desk.
How true is that? You know, it's just incredible. Where have you gotten some of your best ideas?
I'm a really good plagiarist. I'll be really honest here. I'm lucky enough to have a decent strategic instinct, but for the most part, when you see other people doing things really well, I tend to find, you know, bits and pieces of those really good ideas and find ways to cobble them together. One of my favorite books right now is a book called The Rational Optimist. And the concept is that the reason that innovation takes place is because people with good ideas come together and two good ideas breed to make a better idea. And that concept to me is the reason I have complete optimism and the fact that we're going to continue to grow as a society, you think about the growth to today and how fast it goes and how businesses get created overnight from something that didn't exist 5 years ago. I have great optimism in the future because of the fact that I think people collaborate and make things better.
You talked about overnight success, and that's something that everywhere in our culture right. These days. What advice would you have to business owners who are in it for the long haul, truly trying to year by year, day by day, kind of build their brand to be foundational through everything that they do?
Yeah, we had a family situation a few years back where Warren Buffett ended up buying a business that was owned by the family. And you know, we do work with a lot of companies that are owned. And,
what a great partner.
Yeah, it was not a bad situation for my wife's family. We end up in a situation often where we've got private equity owned clients, and some private equity organizations are in it for the flip. Berkshire Hathaway is in it for the long haul. And his advice to his managers is run this business like it's the only asset your family's going to have for the next 100 years. That's the way we run our business. We obviously really like businesses that are around for the long haul and not trying to fatten up a balance sheet. So if you run the business like, you know, your grandkids have to have this business as their asset and not the cash that it throws off, I think you're going to make good decisions.
Jackson, thanks. Dudley, good morning. I'm going to shift to you.
Good morning. Tough act to follow.
Well, this is great because this morning we have two folks who've really built their businesses from the ground floor up. Dudley, I guess you're now on your third or fourth. I called you a repeat entrepreneur. I don't want to be wrong in that.
No, the Flightbridge would be the third.
Third, okay.
And we'll be the best.
Because the one currently is always the best.
Right. No. If I back up a little bit, the up until Flightbridge, my focus has always been services, technology services, consulting. The first two businesses revolved around building technology solutions for business, for other people's businesses. So Flightbridge is the first where we found this opportunity to provide a product largely based on technology, but it's a product that we're now offering to private aviation, as you know. So, it's a tool for aircraft operators and for fixed-based operators, which are those private terminals at the airports that serve the aircraft operators. And
those are called FBOs, right?
That's right.
For the industry terminology?
Yes, it's FBO. Some people think of it as the gas station, but it's a lot more than that. They provide, all the services that, a private trip requires, from rental cars to catering to limousines, and our software is basically an online tool for arranging all those services.
So it seems like when you start a business, there's always that seed of a thought or a market opportunity. What was it for you around Flightbridge? What was that aha moment where you said this could really have some legs?
Right. So, over the years with, Palace and Financial Dynamics, the companies prior, the services companies, I'd seen a lot of different industries, had a lot of clients, and I had a couple of clients in the aviation industry plus a personal passion for, you know, for aircraft and flying.
Do you have your license?
I do.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And but the one thing that's very obvious about private aviation anyway is it's very high touch. But that, in a way, has kind of held it back because they're accustomed to such high-touch service that everything is done by phone, fax, email, typically up until, you know, something like FlightBridge.
Right.
And so seeing that firsthand, and then also it's very fragmented and distributed.
There's like a mom and pop element to it.
Yeah, pretty much there are, you know, when it comes to commercial travel, there are 70 major airports that people fly in and out of. And you can pretty much expect to get all the services you might need at any one of those. Every rental car provider is at every airport. There's lines of taxis out there. There's, you know, black car drivers will approach you in the baggage claim area. But when it comes to the 5,000 other airports out there that private aviation uses, it ranges from no services, where you better prearrange anything you might need and have it waiting for you when you get there, to some subset of providers who might be on the field. And then also a lot of mom and pops when it comes to especially the car services and the caterers. That's someone with a kitchen, you know, in town that has kind of...
Who's going to make six sandwiches for the next flight or whatever.
That's right. And so if you're the aircraft operator flying in there, you typically rely a lot on that FBO to know who the good providers are, which means a phone call or two or five. When the trips change and cancel. So FlightBridge basically evolved to help make that more efficient, to streamline that, you know, at its heart is a directory of service providers at these 5,000 airports. But it's more than just a directory. It's actually a booking tool. So you can, book your crew hotels, your rental cars, your limousines. You get instant confirmations for half of it, and some of it you're waiting for that mom and pop caterer to, you know, reply.
Dudley, you've been in the technology business really for over 25 years now, and I've heard you talk in the past about icky niches and the concept of something that's fragmented that you can overlay technology onto and really make a difference. It seems like your product is driving a lot of efficiency for all the parties involved. Is that kind of at the heart of what you're trying to do, the FlightBridge?
Well, definitely driving efficiencies, and it's a niche, but I would say it's more the nuances that, you know, make it an opportunity, because, you know, there are, in our private lives, we're all used to, using Expedia to book hotels or just go online to arrange whatever services we might need to. And that just didn't exist, in this area. And it needed to be done in a way that kind of recognizes what's unique about private aviation, mainly the fact that FBO is so critical to everything, because it's kind of the nexus where the aircraft and the services all come together. And whether it's the FBO who's arranging the services, we've got tools for them, or whether it's the aircraft operator, the charter department, the corporate flight department, you know, private aircraft operator, whoever it might be, aircraft owner, our tools are there to kind of streamline all that and keep everyone on the same page.
So you recently signed alliances with Avis, with Hertz, and with some of the big FBOs out there. Talk a little bit about that sales process, and particularly as a startup, how do you sell to really the industry giant in the context of Avis and Hertz?
Right. Well, and we're not so much selling to Avis and Hertz. We're providing all the rental car providers. We do have press releases on those too, but we actually support all the major brands and a couple of the specialty brands that focus on private aviation. But the large FBO chains, I think you're probably referencing Wilson Air Center, because we do have a press release on that. They're the way we sell them. We didn't really sell them, and that's kind of been my we solved a problem for them. And that's where my consulting background kind of comes into play here. Everything, you know, we do, we're trying to, you know, understand the business problem, work with the customer to then devise the technology, that's going to help solve that problem, streamline it. And the people at Wilson Air Center were just great people to work with to help. And they were willing to, I'll call them guinea pigs. They were willing to play that role. And, you know, we spent a year working closely with them to help understand, you know, what was going to be the perfect, you know, the perfect solution to what they needed, and then do it in a way that we could then, you know, replicate it and extend it across the industry. So they were, and we did the same thing on the aircraft operator side. We find a handful of customers that are willing to, you know, work with us. It's taken, we're in the third year now. It was 3 years ago we started FlightBridge, and the first year and a half, you know, almost two, were a lot of R&D and a lot of just working really closely with a handful of customers. But then once you've got those great leaders who are endorsing your product, and, you know, at this point we're like at the point, that inflection point in the S-curve where we've got just a backlog of customers, because it's a small industry. Everybody knows everybody. And right. Once you've got a couple of, you know, successes with the kind of key influential customers, then it's not selling. At that point, it's support, setup, account management, and that's kind of where we're focused right now.
You mentioned the period in your the phase of your development that I think every entrepreneur goes through, which is that R&D and time when you're kind of germinating the idea. Sounds like yours took a year or two, primarily because of the technology elements of it. But talk about that a little bit. You know, how do you keep going through that stage? How do you keep your employee base motivated when you're not quite ready for prime time?
Yeah, it definitely, as I'm sure you'll hear many times as you do this with other, you know, entrepreneurs, is it takes longer, costs more money. but we weren't going to, you know, we were going to do it right. And so we were in it for the long haul. We, mm-hmm. you know, as Jackson said, you know, my grandchildren depend on this.
Right.
we're not going to cut corners. And so we just stuck with it. Now, it was not employees that needed the motivation. They, you know, they have been as passionate as I have been from the beginning, and have, you know, and these are, a lot of these people are people who I've worked with for, you know, 10 or 15 years on the services side of you know, the prior businesses. And
so you kind of pulled some of your core team off of your other business and onto this.
Right. So that helped us basically make sure that we started with the best of the best, mm-hmm. but they've put in more. They love the idea of working for something that they own, they truly have ownership of, as opposed to, they always felt ownership for whatever we would deliver for our other customers. But now they're working on something that they know they do have some ownership of. And, you know, I've put a lot of their heart and soul into, and they were going to see it through, and are, you know, and now they're getting to, you know, see the rewards of that.
Yeah. That motivation that comes from ownership really at every level is just dramatic. I know that you raised some additional outside funds to start the business, but then you've recently completed a second round. Congratulations. That's always great. Talk a little bit about how you approach the market for investing in an idea. And then I guess secondly, how did it go? How is it different the first time versus, right, you know, going back around?
The first time, you know, I'm kind of amazed, you know, now that I think back at, you know, 3 years ago, and it was 2.5 years ago, we had the beginnings of a product. We had a couple of guinea pig customers. We had a lot of PowerPoint. We had a lot of ideas. We had some focus groups. We had some statistics and models, but we didn't really have a product. Yet somehow, you know, we found a, you know, friends and family kind of, you know, pool of people who thought it sounded like a good idea and were willing to, you know, write some checks. Second time, this most recent time is very different. It's, you know, we've got products and customers, and it was a good problem to have, which is like, okay, now how do we get this ramped out and ramped up as quickly yet, you know, correctly as possible? And so that just required, you know, hiring people to execute and you know, make sure that we don't stumble as we're, growing.
So that's when you've moved from that initial group that's really investing in an idea to a group now that has the ability to see the vision, and you've actually started to make progress along those lines. It kind of goes into more of a business analysis type of investment.
Yeah, the second round was much more just looking at a model and looking at all the facts. It was all facts. It was not as much as kind of wishes and hopes as it was 3 years ago.
Right. Yeah, you love those blue sky investors, though, for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dudley. That's a great synopsis of your business. I'd like to open it up to both of you, and maybe before we go into that, Jackson, I'd love your view on selling to the big guys. Because that's you do that in your business as well. And any thoughts on that?
We do. I will say that our model has been really more business with people, and making sure that your reputation is one that they can invest in. And our history of client acquisition has been traditionally relationship-based. So we've known somebody, they've given us an assignment, they've grown in their assignment, we've been successful with them, and they've gone to another career, and so we end up with two clients out of the mix. I will painfully admit that our business development activity is a little bit limited. Frankly, we don't do any business development. We're unlike most agencies. We don't do open pitches. There are a lot of things that we won't do unless we know it's our business to lose and an organization just sort of going through the exercise because they feel like they have to from a procurement standpoint.
So it's really a word of mouth and building your brand, so to speak, or your expertise one client at a time.
Yeah, clients hire you because you can get the job done, which most capable agencies can. Obviously, if you have category experience, you've got a way to prove that. Because you want to get the job done, and that means they've got to take a flyer on whether or not they're going to be important to you or not. Everybody pretends that new client's going to be important, so you got to convince them of that. And then finally, do I want to go to beer with these guys after the meeting's over? And
that's always a great threshold moment.
It is. And I think that if somebody really convinces you that they can get the job done in a unique way, that the other two criteria aren't that important. Reality is that most of us do this about the same way. Obviously ideas are the winner. So if you see our work and there's an idea in it that changes your opinion of that brand, then maybe we're doing a better job of that side of the conversation. And then you just better be a really good customer service organization. This is a services business.
So you're both really effectively in a very high touch service business. One of the things that's really kind of coming clear in today's business world is data is everywhere and it's growing.
Yep.
And, this concept of big data is perhaps an overused term, but I've got to imagine that there are some really cool applications to both of your businesses for some of this data mining, et cetera. Jackson, any thoughts on that?
Obviously data is just prolific now, and particularly the ability to see somebody's activity online, see where they spend time, see what they scroll over. Understanding how to retarget them after they've spent time with your content so that you can go back to them with more. That's all very available, and knowing which sites produce more time and which sites produce less is great. I'm a fundamental believer that, analysis paralysis kills a lot of really good ideas. And so we are also believers in taking a little bit of risk and using enough data to make an intelligent. We do measure twice, cut once, and we believe in that. We believe in customer insight generated through quantitative more than qualitative measures, because you tend to let the qualitative stuff, you get your own opinion all mixed in there, and then it's a little hard to figure out what's yours and what the group said or the individual said. But quantitative insight that allows you to know what opinion you need to change to affect your success is pretty critical, and particularly vis-a-vis your competition.
So, Jackson, you mentioned qualitative versus the soft side. How do you kind of get into those issues, Dudley?
So the qualitative,
the quantitative data aspect of things versus, the softer look and feel. And I would think that both of those are really important for FlightBridge.
Right. Well, on the data side, one thing that's unique about our area is that confidentiality and security is probably one of the most, probably the single most important, you know, thing about what we do. So we're almost doing the opposite of big data in terms of we're providing a service to a large pool of customers, but everybody's data is locked down and
okay.
And their own, and there is no kind of pooling and analysis across. And if anything, we go to great lengths to make sure we don't. But the data is key. Qualitative, you know, the look and the feel. I mean, we have some nice briefing documents, but really for us, data drives everything.
I guess you did some of that in your product development work, working with beta clients, so to speak, to get their feedback on that softer side, the look and feel and how it their process flow, et cetera.
Right, and it's an ongoing. We do new releases of the software every couple of weeks, and we're constantly getting feedback from customers. And then within a few weeks, they see their feedback reflected, and they love it.
Yeah.
So, that's an important part of.
You know, I think, not to interrupt, Dudley, but I think the idea of user experience as a discipline is maybe the best thing that's ever happened to business. I mean, that you care enough to really understand how your customer interacts with your product or your website. I mean, it's a technology sort of discipline, but I think it needs to cross-pollinate into everything that we do. How you interact with the Coke truck driving down the street, you know, is part of the user experience for Coca-Cola. And they understand that every time somebody sees that red brand, they react in a certain way and they want to make sure they react positively.
So this brings me to another topic. This user experience is great. As we think about the next generations, Generation X, millennials, et cetera, how do you market effectively, Jackson, to the next generation? And this is, I guess, an age-old issue, but any thoughts on that?
Well,
these days?
Generations tend to be age-driven. So, I mean, obviously the technology influence on Generation Y and millennials and about is different than the technology influence it was on me. But I watch my kids at 22 make about the same decisions I was making at 22. You know, I mean, it's age-based as much as it is generational.
Right.
I do think that the BS meter is very sensitive with that age group. And they all call each other out, and the social media calls each other out. So, if you don't live up to your promise, if you're disingenuous, you've got a problem. And I, you know, my advice to my children has always been, first and foremost, you know, be who you are. Keep your integrity intact always, but be genuine, because I have very little patience for somebody who's not genuine, and I think that my kids' age group has even less.
Dudley, you have kind of a perhaps another issue in that you're oftentimes motivating Generation X or Y or millennials because a lot of your partners in the business are younger than you are, and you're kind of have that feeder from Georgia Tech and other places. But talk about motivating younger employees or partners.
So we've got that the Gen X Y influence on both the customer side and on my employee side. Mm-hmm. And on the employee side, you know, as you pointed out, we're right there by Georgia Tech, so it's been a great place to bring in just what start off as co-op or, you know, interns and then who never leave. So I've got a couple of people who are like, you know, I've always believed that if you kind of treat people like adults, they'll rise to the occasion. Mm-hmm. And they've really appreciated the culture and the atmosphere and the autonomy. And, you know, we've got a great place to work. And so they keep coming back. On the customer side, you know, one of our biggest challenges is just having, you know, providing these new tools that are kind of tools we take for granted on the, you know, in our personal life that, you know, we've got a range of customers out there from their 50s, you know, and 60s down to their 20s and 30s. And the 20s and 30-year-olds just assume that these tools exist.
And that they're perfect and operate exceptionally well, right?
Right. And then they're just shocked when, you know, we're the only one there, where then the other ones who have been picking up the phone and doing things the, you know, the non-online way for 20 years, and then we show up with this great new tool, change is hard for them. Now it's harder for the, you know, for some generations than others.
Okay. We're going to shift into another part of the program. I always ask everyone what the best business advice you've ever received was. Jackson, thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, it's life advice, and it's from my dad, and it's, you know, make sure that your reputation's all you have, so make sure that it's pristine and that keep your integrity intact, and I think people will trust you and believe you and take a risk with you if they know that they can have confidence in you.
Excellent. Dudley?
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know what you're good at and focus, you know, focused on your strengths. And I actually had a client who's a CFO who said, I want, you know, he helped us realize that what we should be doing and focused on, which is around the technology and the services, to allow the customer to then focus on what they do.
Because that makes, again, as a founder of a business, but also as you grow your business, if you focus on your strengths and build around that, then at times you become institutional. Your reputation as an institution does that as well. That's I guess how some of the greatest companies in the world have been started.
You know, I'll add a thought to that though, is understand your competitor's strengths. Everybody wants to focus on the competitor's weaknesses and where they're vulnerable. Their customers buy from them because of their strengths, not their weaknesses. And so make sure you understand them as well.
Yeah. Great advice. Thank you both. Now we're going to move into the speed round. This is where I ask you a few questions that are a little bit off the cuff here, but, I always have to ask everyone what your favorite movie is.
Oh, I'll go first. I think I'll have to give a nod to my dad's generation. I'd say A Band of Brothers Saving Private Ryan is got to be one that's always on my list of things that I'll rewatch if it's on TV.
Okay, great. Dudley?
Oh, I'm a computer geek at heart, so I'd have to pick something like Star Wars.
That's great.
I think 7 is coming out here pretty soon, right? Hard to believe.
With Disney stop spending, right?
I knew I was really old when I was working with a guy years ago, and I said, what are you doing this weekend? And he said, I'm going to the re-release of Star Wars. And I said, can't you just remember the first time you saw Star Wars? And the guy looked at me and he said, I wasn't even born yet. What about Jackson, favorite vacation spot?
Oh, wow. I love anything with water. And if there's a fish and a boat involved, so we just got back from the BVI with a big family trip, and it was an unbelievable time. I'd do it again in a second.
You just stole mine. That's all right. We love the BVIs also. Charter a boat for a week, 10 days, there's nothing better.
Now, in addition to being a pilot, Dudley, I think I remember that you're a boat captain,
that's
too.
That's right. So that's exactly what we do. We'll just charter the boat and just family and sometimes another family.
You know how to make lots of vehicles move, it sounds like.
Yes, I do like.
That's great. What about Dudley, your favorite motorcycle? past or present?
Well,
are there any
you
brands
know me
out
too
there?
Well. You
are there any brands
well.
Out there that are particularly good these days?
I haven't had a motorcycle since college, but but I do love the look of a Ducati.
So if you were to buy one today, you'd go with a Ducati.
I don't think that'd be very popular at home though, so I probably am not going to do that.
Understand. We all kind of go to the next phase. Now you just have to drive planes instead. Jackson, if you had the opportunity to be either a college or professional athlete, what position would you play and what team would you be on?
I was a football player, so I would probably go back there, although I think longevity is probably a little better in baseball. I am a college athletics fan, and I watch pro sports, but I'm not in love with it. So, you know, maybe an Ole Miss Rebel right now would be a lot of fun to be a member of.
There you go. Would you be on the defense or the offense?
I'm defensive.
Yeah, so middle linebacker or something.
That's exactly right.
You don't have any teeth that come out, do you?
No, we did have face masks. When I was there.
That's great. Well, and then Dudley, favorite restaurant here in the Atlanta area?
I'd have to say I was just there with my wife for our anniversary. Canoe, when it cools off like this and you can sit outside, I'd pick Canoe.
Fantastic. Well, Guys, thank you so much for being with us today. This has been a great conversation. I'd love it if you could tell our listeners how to get in contact with you and learn more about your company.
Sure. So 3 is at 3atlanta.com. It's the number 3, Atlanta spelled out .com. There's about anything you need to know about us there. We're in the middle of Buckhead.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jackson.
And then just www.flightbridge.com. Same thing.
Great.
It's all there.
Dudley, Jackson, thank you so much for being with us this morning. This has been fantastic.